Hello and welcome to this episode of Keep It Positive, Sweetie. I'm Crystal Renee Hazlett, and today I have with me my dear, dear friend, my brother from another mother, DeVal Ellis.
What's up?
What's up? How you feeling?
I'm chilling, you know.
We got you on. Listen, they've been asking for you.
Have they?
Yeah, no. Can we get DeVal and Kadeen on the couch?
I'm here.
He's here.
I'm here.
We got him. We appreciate you.
No, I appreciate you.
No, for real. Thank you.
I love this. I'm excited
about
this. I remember when it was just a...
A thought. Yeah.
And now it's here. I like it.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you so much. When I think of you, DeVal, I think of anything Pop Smoke. Anything Brooklyn. So, what's a Brooklyn song? Where Brooklyn at?
Where Brooklyn at? That's the perfect. I got 7 things about. Yup. You see what I'm saying?
No, literally, that's what I think of. Because everywhere we go, it does not matter where we are, DeVal is going to rep Brooklyn.
Facts.
We could be at an Atlanta Hawks game. Facts. Working.
Why you gonna bring that up?
Working.
Why you gonna bring that
and
up?
And he gonna be like, Brooklyn, stand up!
I got fired.
In State Farm Arena.
I can't do
it.
What
are you doing?
I can't do it no more.
You
got
would
fired.
Do it again. You're like, I'll do it again.
And that's why they don't ever bring me back up there. Have me swag surfing.
Yeah, everybody was like.
And they was playing the Nets too.
That was crazy.
Yeah.
That was crazy. For those who don't know, let me tell you, DeVal Ellis is a former NFL player turned actor. Currently, he is a series regular in the number one cable television drama series, Tyler Perry's Sisters, and the star of his very own number one rated spinoff, Zatima, which he has the pleasure of playing opposite yours truly.
Talk about it.
Can't leave this out. You are also a New York Times bestseller for your book,
yes.
We Over Me, that you co-wrote with your wife, Kadeen Ellis.
Yes.
Amazing.
Amazing.
I'm so happy you are here. You are one of my closest friends. I just love you. I look up to you, and I admire you so much.
Thank you, man.
When I think about the first time we met, the first time I actually saw you was on Instagram and social media.
A word?
That was my first introduction of you. But okay. I never, a word, like everybody ain't seen you. A word. But we got to, the first time I actually met you in person or saw you in person was in the audition room for Sisters. At the time, Fatima was a really small character that hadn't yet been introduced.
Yeah.
And I was a producer on the show, or still am a producer on the show, but I was sitting in the back of the room watching all the auditions with Tyler. And that was the first time I got to see you as an actor. And I was like, wow, he has something special.
Oh, that's what's up.
Yeah, man. No, for real. Then we got to know each other through Sisters.
Mm-hmm.
I remember getting the call saying, I'm going to make you Zach's girlfriend or his love interest. And I was like, what?
Yeah, I did, when I first read it, I was like, "How? Where is this going?
I didn't understand it. Yeah. I was like, y'all can't give me, you know what I'm saying, a tall, dark chocolate.
That's your type, too. That is your type, too.
I was like.
That is your type, too.
Right. It is. Okay, I'm going to just put that in the atmosphere. Tall, dark chocolate and some other things. Because I've learned I got to be careful what I say because that's what God will bring me. And that's
Facts.
All he'll have is just tall, dark, and chocolate.
Facts.
So I got to be careful what I say.
Facts.
But I remember when we got the call, we started rehearsing together.
Yeah.
And at first it was just like straight rehearsing. And one day you were like, so tell me about yourself. We had never just had a conversation. It was like, hey, I'm Crystal. Like, do you want to run it?
You called me so like meek. And I was like, here's the funny thing is, I got the scripts, and you know, there were a couple guys who had a crush on you.
Oh, I remember.
Right? They had a crush on you. I'm not going to blow them up, but I got the scripts, and I'm reading the scripts, and it says, Zach and Fatima. And then finally it says, Zach and Fatima start to have sex. So I immediately called those guys.
Saturday, right?
And I said, well, guys. And they were pissed at me.
Pissed at me.
I'm letting y'all know. But then we were also scared because you're also a producer on the show.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, this is our boss. So like there has to be a level of respect, you know, when dealing with this role. So when you called me, I was nervous. I was like, is she calling me as a producer or as an actor?
Mm-hmm.
And then you were so meek on the phone. And I was like, why is she so meek? Like you were a producer. You worked with Tyler all of these years.
Mm-hmm.
I was nervous more than anything else.
Wow, that's crazy.
I was.
And I was nervous because that was my first time really acting and then having a scene partner like you who's had experience and been on all these shows. I'm like, oh God, okay, here we go. And I remember calling you to rehearse because it was during the pandemic. No, actually the pandemic hadn't happened yet. It was beginning of January. It was beginning of of remember we got the call we were going to do it, and then our
season. Oh, we got the, in March.
Yep,
we got the call in March,
so we weren't coming back because of COVID. So that was our initial interaction, and here we are, 5 years later.
Since
2019.
Yeah, since 2019, but that was actually 2020.
So 4 years later.
4 years later, but I do remember us running lines the first couple of times. And we were just like, yo, I kind of like this chemistry of where the story's going. Because at the time you were paralegal and Zach just coming out of prison. Right. And it was just like, they can have like a coming of age love story.
Yeah.
And we were like, we're going to get our own show.
Literally said that. It shows you the power of the tongue, guys. We literally said this, and like 2 years later or even less than that.
It was less than that. We sat on the bed, we were getting ready to do a scene, and Tyler walked in. He walked in and said,
I like this. And we looked at each other like,
he was like,
it's about to happen.
Yes.
We knew it at that moment. I remember it had not been officially announced, and we heard the crew whispering about Zatima's coming, Zatima, because they saw it on the production calendar. We were like,
what
are you talking about? And then I got the call. Yo, nigga, you got your own show. I was like, you are lying to me.
That was, oh my gosh, I was in bed. I was in bed with Kay. T called me. And Kay was just looking at me. Like, she could tell that something was happening.
Yeah.
Because I was on the phone. Then I sat up.
Yeah.
And I remember saying, you serious?
You for real?
Stop playing.
You like Usher.
So then she
probably like.
Up. Yeah, she jumped up like,
what you?
Yeah, she looked nervous. And I was like. And I told her it was an exciting time, yo.
No, it really was. The rest has been history. That's amazing.
We did that, yo.
We did. We really did that.
We manifested it. We worked for it.
Yeah.
We did it.
Speaking of manifesting, I feel like a lot of your life has been manifested. Let's take it back. Let's go all the way back. Because I want to give people the full scope of DeVal. Going all the way back to being raised in Brooklyn, New York. Having these dreams, did you always dream of being an NFL star? Did you always dream of being an actor? How did that come about?
Never wanted to be in the NFL.
Really? So how did that, you were just that good?
One of my
Stop.
No, this is a true story. My parents didn't want their kids in the streets in Brooklyn. So they used to send us down to Morristown, Tennessee.
Shout out to Tennessee. Yes.
Every year for 8 weeks for our grandparents. We went down there. They had an acre and a half of grass.
Wow.
They had trees. They had everything. And it was just a space for us to have some time to be away from the city. All you have to do there is ride bikes, run, jump, climb trees.
And drink out the water hose.
Exactly.
And don't be letting my air out.
Man, stay outside. If you come back inside, you inside all day. Yeah. You know how country parents are.
Yes.
So I remember going down to Morristown, Tennessee, and just being super athletic because we had nothing else to do.
Yeah.
Like, all we did was play and jump and run and race and run up the hill. And they lived in the mountains. So everything was uphill or downhill. So all that acceleration, deceleration made me athletic.
Wow.
But here's the thing that kind of sparked my interest. We used to go to the boys' club when we turned 13. Then they turned it from the boys' club to the Boys and Girls Club of America. And when they did that, they added creative arts. And I remember being 13 years old, and I went back into the Creative Arts Center, and they were in there singing and dancing and putting on plays. And I was like, I want to do that.
Wow.
But here's the crazy part. I'm a kid from Brooklyn. Everybody who goes into the creative arts who's a male is looked at as soft, weak, gay.
Yeah.
You know, and this is the 90s.
Yeah.
So,
It's
a different time. Yeah. Like no one is even speaking about that type of lifestyle. So it was like, man, what do I do?
Yeah.
I'ma just play sports. I'ma just ignore that part of my life and play sports. So I did that.
Wow.
And I just told my parents I was gonna find a way to go to college so that after I go to college I could be an artist.
Wow. Yeah. That is amazing. So when you started playing, how old were you when you started playing football?
16.
Okay.
I was a basketball player. I could dunk when I was in eighth grade. I'm not tall. I was only 5'7", but I was crazy explosive, like I said, being in Morristown.
Yes.
So my brother and my cousin and I, we were all just super athletic.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, you know, I'm going to go to the NBA. But my goal to go to the NBA was only to make enough money so that I didn't have to be a starving artist.
Wow. Oh my
and then,
gosh.
Yeah, that's literally the whole thing was I'm going to go to the NBA. So I looked at Allen Iverson. He was like my size. And, you know, I designed my game around him. And then my basketball coach, you know, he was a tough guy, but he wasn't one of those guys that got kids into college.
Right.
And then the football coach came and said, yo, you 5'9", and you can dunk. This is when I was a sophomore in high school. So 5'9", you can dunk. Why don't you just play football? I was like, man, nobody playing no football. I'm 130 pounds.
Right.
He said this to me. He said, you want to go to school? I said, yeah. He said, you want to go to school for free? I said, yeah. He said, you play between the numbers and the sideline. I'll get you to school for free. So at 16 years old, I picked up football.
Wow.
And the rest was history.
The rest was history. That is crazy. Mm-hmm. So you go to school at Hofstra.
Yeah.
And then were you drafted or did you?
Wasn't drafted. I was a walk-on at Hofstra. I was a walk-on. I was small. Mm-hmm. At the time when I was being recruited, and this is something for parents to understand, mm-hmm. I was 17 when I played my last down of football in high school. Because I was in school early.
Okay.
So I didn't turn 18 until the end of the year. But that season, I was 17. Mm-hmm. I was competing against 18, 19-year-olds.
Right.
So I was only, at the time, 5'10", 148 pounds. So all the schools came, and they were just like...
I wish I was 148.
You wish you was 148 pounds? Fatima cannot be 148 pounds. Stop that. But I haven't been that weight since high school.
Wow.
But I broke a bunch of records. I caught 26 passes for 831 yards, 15 touchdowns. Mm-hmm. Thought I was going to get a scholarship offer, never came.
Mm-hmm.
So Hofstra offered me a partial scholarship, mm-hmm. which was just room and board and books.
Yeah.
At the time, it was $10,000. My parents had to pay $15,000 for tuition.
Mm-hmm.
So I told my parents, I said, yo, just let me walk on.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to earn a scholarship.
Mm-hmm.
Once I get the scholarship, my plan was to make a practice squad in the NFL. I could make $100,000 in 4 months.
Mm-hmm.
And those 4 months, I was going to buy a brownstone in Brooklyn. Shout out to Brooklyn. Rent out the top two floors, live downstairs.
So oh, you
I
didn't had have a plan.
I had a whole plan.
Wow.
If I had a whole plan from the time I was 17.
Wow. Wow, DeVal. So you've always been like this. Because for me to know you now, you're a strategic thinker.
Well, remember, you started talking about manifestation.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
God gave me all of these visions.
Yeah.
I kid you not. From the time I was young, a voice always said to me, where you are is not going to be where you spend the rest of your life.
Mm.
That voice told me that.
Yeah.
And the same voice always told me to question things and challenge things mm-hmm. and not to do things the traditional way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So ever since I had that, I always felt like God had me.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. When it came time to doing something outside the box,
mm-hmm.
I'm on it.
You're like, I'm on it because God got me.
God got me.
Wow. I love that. Yeah. So you get through college and... it's time for the NFL draft.
So
what happens?
This is funny, man. I killed college.
Yeah.
I was on pace to be the only receiver to have 1,000 yards 2 years in a row.
Oh, wow.
I played with Marcus Colston, who's a freaking savage. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows that.
Yeah.
But if we're being honest, I was the number one receiver on the team. He was the number two receiver.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at Marcus Colston, he's 6'5", 230 pounds, and runs a 4.4. If goodness. I'm taking a receiver,
yeah.
I'm taking Marcus Colston.
Right.
I'm not taking the little fast guy.
Uh-huh.
But once again, my plan was to just make a practice squad. Mm-hmm. It was like, yo, I didn't get drafted. I wasn't even a high priority free agent.
Mm.
I wasn't. It was just, I ran the fast time. They was like, you can come try out if you want to.
Yeah.
I ran a 4.3 and a 40,
mm-hmm.
40-inch vertical, 10.5 on the broad jump. Like, I had all the measurables.
Right.
Just some small guy from a small school.
Mm-hmm.
So at this point, I'm 5'11", 175 pounds, still tiny.
Yeah.
I told my wife, Kay, I said, yo, all I got to do is make a practice squad.
Mm-hmm.
I get $100,000 and then we can
get
our dream.
Right.
And I ended up making a team.
Wow.
And made way more than $100,000.
Go now.
And then it was like, all right, well, I can buy some property. Mm-hmm. I can start some businesses. So this way, when I get into my art, I'm not broke.
Right.
And then I got cut. Unexpectedly, my third season.
Oh, man.
At the same time as the recession.
Mm.
Lost all my money.
So, okay, wow. So, what in that moment, what is going through your head? Because I would have been like, Lord, why?
I was mad.
Yeah.
I was mad, and I was mad. And I hate saying this. I was mad at God.
Mm.
You know how they say, you know, Jesus was on the cross, and he said, God, why have you forsaken
yes.
me?
Mm-hmm.
That was me, in my bathroom, running the shower.
Mm-hmm.
Kay is in there because I had just proposed to Kay. I just bought a house. I was planning my life.
Yeah.
Remember, I always had a plan. I was planning my life.
Mm-hmm.
I was slated to be the number three receiver, punt returner, kick returner.
Mm-hmm.
And that summer comes around and...
Hey, sweeties. Have you ever wondered what's in the products you use on a daily basis?
Well, let me tell you about Elle. Elle, like the letter, is a brand committed to providing you period care products inspired by nature, made without dyes, fragrances, and synthetic pesticides. Their pads have a breathable cotton top layer and a plant-based core, and their tampons contain an organic cotton core. Now, not only can you feel good about Elle's ingredients, but also Elle's price. With tampons and pads that protect for under $5 a month, Elle believes access to period care is not only a fundamental right for everyone, but an opportunity for change as well. That's why Elle is on a mission to make exceptional period care accessible for all by providing funding each year to nonprofit community-based organizations around the world focused on period care accessibility, menstrual health education, and employment opportunities. So, if you're looking for a brand that aligns with your values of giving back and using products inspired by nature, look no further than Elle. If you want to learn more about their mission or browse their full range of products, visit their website at thisiselle.com. And the next time you're in the period care aisle, look for Elle pads and tampons. Choose love, choose Elle.
It all just went to shit. I got cut. I was losing $15,000 a day in the stock market. I had bought two properties. Both properties' value was going down because the housing market had burst.
Yeah.
So I had no equity in the properties. I had to move back to Brooklyn in my grandparents' old apartment with my fiance. And I sat in my, I used to sit in the bathroom. I used to put the water on, close the door, and I would cry.
Devel.
I would cry. I would sit, and she'd be like, babe, you okay? And I'd be in there, I'd just be like, yeah, I'm like, yeah, yeah, I'm good. Letting the water heat up.
Yeah.
Because we lived in an old apartment. That water used to be hot, and I used to be in there freaking bawling. Because I was like,
what are you going to do?
I followed everything you told me to do. When all my friends and people were in the NFL, and they were buying chains, and they were buying, they're going to the strip club, buying fancy cars, I drove a Ford F-150. My payment was $135 a month. I put all my money and property in the stock market, and all of it got taken. And I was like, I listened.
Yeah.
I was committed. You know, I was with my girlfriend at the time, was my wife. I was doing everything the right way. And it all was taken from me. And I was just like, God, why? Like, this ain't fair.
Right.
Like, I was like, this is trash. If this is life, why did I do all of that?
Right.
I said, I could have been promiscuous. I could have been to strip clubs. I could have bought chains and cars, and I still would have the same amount of money.
Yeah.
And I would still have the same feeling because I felt like less of a man. I'm like, I asked this woman to marry me under the pretenses that I was going to take care of her. And now I'm asking her to move back to my grandparents' apartment in Brooklyn. Like, I just felt like.
That's a blow.
Yeah. My ego was done. I was just kind of like, and I don't like to say I have suicidal thoughts because that's just a thing. But I did kind of, it was times I was just like, man, why am I even living no more? Like, I didn't want to get out of bed. Like, it was bad.
Right.
Yeah.
In that moment, what was the pivot that made you say, you know what, get up, DeVal. Like, you got to move on from this. Life has to go on and I need to pick myself up.
It's going to sound crazy, but when you're responsible for someone else, like, you just can't.
Yeah.
I asked my wife to marry me. What am I going to do now?
Yeah.
Like, what am I going to do? And then growing up in a Baptist church, you always hear about trials and tribulations.
Absolutely.
You always hear about tests. And then it was like, there was one person who used to always call me. It was my Aunt Debbie.
Love Aunt Debbie.
You know, my Aunt Debbie. I love you, Aunt Debbie. when you go through something like that, most of your family doesn't know how to approach you.
Yeah.
People think that, you know, oh, when you're on high, everybody wants to be around you, but then when you're low, nobody wants to be, they discard you.
Talk about it.
I've learned that it's not that they just discard you, but if you're the light to so many people, and now your light goes out, those people really don't know what to say or how to be of service.
Yeah.
You've been of service to so many people, and now you need somebody. They really don't know. My Aunt Debbie would call me like once a week. Hi, poo poo. Hi, poo poo. I'm like, what's up, Aunt Debbie? She's like, you all right?
Aww.
I'm like, yeah. She used to ask me one time, you in your Bible? I should be like, yeah, lying.
Lying.
Like, straight lying.
Right.
And she was like, poo poo, you don't gotta lie to me. And all she said was, you just remember how you was raised. That's all she would say. You remember how you was raised. And that was kind of like, you know what? You're right. Because my father was laid off when I was 17 years old, going into my senior year. My father was working for Chase Bank forever. My father always kept multiple jobs. He used to bounce work at Chase Bank. He would sell jewelry. My father did everything to provide for his family. I remember my father came home one day and said, I got laid off. I was like, hello, like, you the man of the house. What you mean you got laid off? He said, don't worry about it, it'll be fine. I got some, because my father always plans. And I said, if my father could go through that, and he had three kids, one going to college, you know, my sister was in private school. I said, all I have now is a fiance. And I thought about how I was raised. And I watched my grandfather get up every morning and go to work. Then I watched my father push through. So I said, fuck it. I'm going to just put my head down and just create. And that's all I did, was create opportunities for myself and for my wife. Like, we had to make money. And I just found ways to create.
Wow. Oh, my goodness.
Them times always be hard for me. I'd be, oh, see, I said I wasn't going to fucking cry. Those really be the hardest times, because people don't know what it's like to be not just a man, but you the light in your family.
My God, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, everybody's like, yo, DeVal, how can I, DeVal, can you, and I'm always like, yeah, because I've always felt like these blessings that have been given to me are not for me. I have a fiduciary responsibility to provide for everyone around me.
Yeah.
Even when I create businesses, you know, it's like I create a business. I'm like, yo, which one of my friends could use extra 15K? I'm like, yo, I'll put you on my business thing. You can da-da-da, you make some extra. Like, I've always been that way. So when you feel like you don't have that ability to be that for people, you don't feel like you belong anywhere. And it's like, I felt like less of a man. I felt like less of a brother, less of a son. And I'm like, I'm failing everybody. So when you push through that, I always put it away. I don't even think about it.
Yeah.
Till I got to talk about it.
And I think that's something we have to do more of. Stop suppressing everything. You know, I feel like, especially the black man, you guys have to be strong for everybody.
And I told you I wasn't going to cry. I don't know why you did this to me, man.
No, it's all right.
My bad. Go ahead.
No, you're good. But as the black man who is the light to everybody, you do hold a lot. And our society and our community has not, until recently, allowed the man to express or to cry or to feel anything. Because, which, like, you, when your dad came home, all right, you the man of the house, what you gonna do? That's
for
been
real.
The thing, you know? So, like,
absolutely.
You have to suck it up and keep going.
That's really, even now. Like, you a creative. There's no salary that every month I'm guaranteed on the 1st and the 15th, I'm gonna get this.
Nope.
I gotta wake up every morning and say, yo, how much money am I gonna make to be able to survive for the next 6 months?
Yes.
Next 5 years. You know, I have a wife now, I have four kids.
Yeah.
They're gonna start going to college. We're looking at private school. I can't just sit back and wait.
No.
So sometimes it is like a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
But I ain't gonna lie to you, yo. God always had me. I've never not had what I needed. I may not have always had what I wanted when I wanted it.
Yeah.
But I've always had what I needed. One story I always tell was when Kadeem, we didn't have insurance, because the NFL, once you get cut, they drop you from insurance. So I had no insurance. Now I have a wife. Now she's pregnant. I'm like, okay, I got to find insurance. I'm like, okay, if I become SAG, let me get on this commercial circuit. So now I'm hustling. Every other day, going to commercials. It was like, well, you got to make $3,400 by October in order to qualify for next year's insurance. I book a Cheerios commercial. I get a check in the mail. It's for like $34.76. It was like almost perfect. Kay calls him and said, hey, my husband just got a check in the mail. And he's like, oh, yeah, we see his name, Ellis. He's qualified. He's SAG eligible. He joined SAG. He can get insurance. God's always done that for me.
Always made a way.
Always made a way. There was times I lived, you know, through my credit card. I had my Square app, and I got kicked off the Square app because I used to cash advance myself money through my American Express. Sorry, American Express. But I used to cash advance myself money to make it from month to month. And this is when I owned a gym. And I was trying to keep the business going. But I also had employees. And there was times where it's like, shoot, it's a valley in training right now, mm-hmm. but these people got to get paid. So yes. I'm like, here's $5,000, here's your $1,000, here's your $1,000. You know what I'm saying? I lived through that for like half a decade.
Wow.
Half a decade, just paycheck to paycheck. Just mm-hmm. I never told Kay how bad it was. Mm-hmm. Never told my parents. I just smiled. Mm-hmm. And I used to be like, yo, D, you doing it? And I'd be in there like broken, like, yep, I'm doing it.
Yeah.
But God always had me. Mm. God had me. And so now, with everything that's happening, I don't take it for granted.
Yeah.
I don't take it for granted. I still put a lot of money away. Mm-hmm. I've learned how to protect my peace, but also protect my future.
Yeah.
So I give to people, but I don't give what I don't have.
Mm-hmm. Mm, that's good.
And, you know, I try to provide a way for myself to exist for years mm-hmm. if everything is taken away. Mm-hmm. You know, I got cut. So last year we went with the strike.
Yeah.
You know, I was able to continue my life as usual.
Because you've been through that.
And that's the message.
That's the message, yeah. Because a lot of times you're looking like, Lord, why have you forsaken me? But all he's doing is preparing you for something else so that the next time you're prepared for it. And do you know how seamless that strike was?
Chris.
Like, and that's, I do not say that in a arrogant way.
I hear you.
It was nothing but the goodness of God. Like, seriously, that we made it through without missing a meal, without any lights going out. Anything. And life still went on. We still had an amazing life. And that was nothing. That's how my God works.
You know, I feel you.
It is. I know it's a storm outside, but you good.
Chris, when people ask me, because spirituality always get questioned, right?
Yeah.
You have a ton of people now who are, there's access to everything.
Yeah.
So we're no longer, which is crazy, we're no longer blind in the world. But I do realize it's the blind leading the blind. Mm-hmm. There's a ton of information.
It's a lot of information.
But and misinformation. Mm-hmm. But what I've realized is that you can't convince someone how to practice faith. Mm-hmm. All I can do is tell you why my faith is important to me. And it's moments like that. Mm-hmm. Like there's no way, I've never had a 9-to-5 ever. Mm-hmm.
Ever.
The only 9-to-5 I had was when I worked at Häagen-Dazs when I was 17.
Oh, wow.
Every time, anything other than that, I've been a contractor. Mm-hmm. Even in the NFL, you know, you're ultimately a private contractor who they can cut at any point. Mm-hmm. Acting is the same way when I owned my gyms. I never worked hourly.
Wow.
God always found a way for me and put things in my path that I could utilize and create a tool. Like, for example, I never thought I'd be a trainer. Mm-hmm. I hate school. Went back to study exercise physiology and kinesiology because I needed to get my degree and certification to be able to make money to provide my family.
Right.
God put that there. Mm-hmm. Never in a million years would I ever thought that I was going to do that.
Right.
But that's why I believe so much. Mm-hmm. Like, no one can tell me. No one can tell me he's not real.
No. Mm-mm. Seriously. We talk about faith a lot, and I'm very open with you about my journey with God. Mm. And I had brought you to church with me one Sunday. Kay came. And church is not something that you guys participate in often.
No.
So let's go back, because I know you were raised in a church.
Yeah.
What was that journey like, and what made you be like, I want to take a step back?
Man, every elder in my family is a parishioner in the church.
Oh, wow.
Minister of music, choir director, Boy Scout leader. My father ran a men's group called the Junior Layman. Mm-hmm. One of my aunts is a minister, like my grandfather's a deacon. Yeah. Everybody's in the church. Mm-hmm. So I was in church every day, Monday through Sunday.
Oh, Lord.
It was choir rehearsal, Bible study, youth council, junior layman, Boy Scouts, junior layman again on a Saturday. Like, I was always in church.
Oh, wow.
So while being there, I've always been inquisitive. Mm-hmm. God gave me messages, ask questions. Mm-hmm. I remember I was in Sunday school and I asked a question about the devil. We were learning about Lucifer being the angel of music. Mm-hmm. And I said, so if Lucifer is the angel of music and he went against God and became the devil, did God make a mistake? Because he didn't make him to be the angel of music. Mm-hmm. And I got screamed at and kicked out of Sunday school. And I was like, I'm asking a legitimate question because I don't understand.
Yeah.
And then when no one could give me an answer or try to, they just, because I was young, I was 12, mm-hmm. when they just kind of pushed me aside as a problem child, that was the beginning of the end for me for church. And then my brother had a baby at 17. Mm-hmm. We had tattoos and braids. Mm-hmm. My father used to get scolded from the pulpit a lot. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yo, y'all just mad judgmental. Like, I just felt like it was so much judgment. Mm-hmm. And I went to college and I started to study different religions because I always had a quest for knowledge. I just wanted to know. So when I was studying Judaism and Catholicism and Christianity and what was the other one?
You said Muslim too. I think you said the Quran, yeah.
I heard about the three books, the Old Testament, the Quran, and the Torah. And the one thing that stuck out to me was that those books tell the same historical story from different perspectives. So there has to be some truth in those books. But it also showed me that I can't tell other people how they're supposed to serve God.
Yeah.
God is omnipotent, right? He's the Alpha and the Omega, the Almighty.
You better, definitely was raised in the church.
You see, the omnipotent, you know.
Yeah.
Who am I to tell someone else that God didn't present himself to you that way?
Right.
So for me to tell the Jews or the Buddhists or the Catholics that you're wrong, my God is the right one, to me just seemed wrong. So I stayed away from creating a label on how I served. And I just seek knowledge. I seek God wherever I am. So for me, it's like if I'm in a church and it's a Catholic church, let me hear the word.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I've been to bar mitzvahs before.
Yeah.
So it's like, let me hear the word, whatever the word is. Let me not tune out what it is. So I stay away from church because I don't want to limit myself.
Yeah.
But I'm not against going to church. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And I mean, I can say that a lot of people, the reason why they aren't in church now to this day is because Christians are labeled judgmental. They feel just how you say, you're being judged from the pulpit.
Yeah.
A lot of people deal with it, and a lot of people deal with church hurt and things that happen in those walls that shouldn't happen, you know. And I think there's a lot of churches that are trying to change that imagery and want to really, like, just make it a safe space.
Absolutely.
That it's supposed to be. But I understand. I had this conversation with my parents one day about, cause I dated a Muslim before. And I tell everybody this all the time when people ask me, like, who was, like, the best guy you ever dated? And it was this guy who was a Muslim. He was the most loving. I'm talking about the way he just, like, looked after me, the cared for me. Like, I felt, that was, like, I really felt love.
I feel you.
And my parents were like, you shouldn't be unequally yoked. And, like, they were really coming at me hard with the Bible and the scripture. And I was like, but he's such a good person. And they ended up meeting him. He came to my college graduation. And they, to this day, love him. Like, absolutely love him. But what I learned as I was, I feel like, because I'm a Christian. I believe in Jesus. I believe he died for our sins. And that's what that's my belief. But I don't judge anybody for what they believe in.
Right.
You know, because God said to love your neighbor as you love yourself.
Absolutely.
So I'm not here to judge you. I hope that, you know what I'm saying? He did say before he comes back, everyone is going to have the chance to proclaim that he is a savior. But I look at religion as a way to have some type of order in different cultures. And the main thing is to treat others as you would treat yourself. So I don't judge other people, but I know what I believe. Because you asked me, like, so what do you identify with?
I did ask you on the phone what you identify with,
And I was like, I'm a Christian. You know, I don't do the Baptist, Catholic,
Episcopal,
Methodist. I don't do that. Because I think by college, it was that's when more the non-denomination
started to arise.
So that's where I am with it. But I don't judge anybody for what they choose to believe in.
Yeah.
You know, I love everybody and I just let my light shine and hope that Christ shines through that.
Chris, I wish more of the world just exist in that type of space. Like if you think about the fact that we have holy wars.
Yeah.
That is the biggest oxymoron I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah.
A holy war.
Yeah.
Like, people should not be fighting people for beliefs. Now, there's a long history of why holy wars have started, you know, and that's it's very political. It's about land and stuff. But my biggest thing is, it is not my job to tell you you're wrong for believing the way you believe. If what you believe keeps you in a sense of peace, allows you not to kill people, hurt people, steal from people, and just be a good person for humanity, then that's what you should believe. You know, and that was my biggest fear from church. Growing up, you know, my godmother was Catholic. And even in the Catholic church, they believe that Jesus died on the cross. They don't believe in the resurrection. So they were just like, you believe in the resurrection? And I'm like, yeah. And then I could feel the judgment. And I'm like, everywhere I go, like why I get judged? I remember one of my friends, Brandon, his father was Jewish. And he was just like, you're not Jewish. You're not of the chosen people. So you can't get access to a positive afterlife.
Wow.
And I'm like, all of y'all have some judgmental way of telling other people that they don't belong. Yeah. I'm not subscribing to that.
Yeah.
I'm not. And I refuse to argue with people. Mm-hmm. I don't want to go back and forth. People argue religion all the time and on social media.
They do.
And I'm like, this is the dumbest thing. Mm-hmm. That person believes in being a better person for whatever they believe. Let them believe that.
Yeah.
I don't argue with my parents. My parents still go to church every Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And they ask me why I don't.
Yeah.
And we have conversations, but I don't judge them.
Yeah. And I'm sure they don't judge you.
They don't
you
judge me.
Yeah.
They love me the way I am. Mm-hmm. They still will take my boys to church when they go.
I was
going to
ask you that. Like, so
yes.
As you're bringing up your boys, like, what are you instilling in them so they have their own walk? Because I know our parents was like, you're going to be in church, every
yes.
Yeah, every Sunday. It wasn't a choice if I wanted to get up on Sunday morning or Bible study on Wednesday nights or choir practice. You were going.
No, absolutely.
So
absolutely.
What do you do to instill that your boys have some type of relationship with God?
That's still a conversation because my wife grew up Seventh-day Adventist.
Right.
And I grew up Baptist. Mm-hmm. They study and practice on Saturday, which is the Sabbath. And we go to church on Sunday.
Right.
Once again, being judged, Kay's aunt, first time she met me, oh, he goes to church on Sunday. That's the wrong day. I was like, oh gosh. I'm like, here we go.
Here we go again.
But Jackson asked me the other day, he was just like, Dad, we don't go to church because I heard church people are mean.
Wow.
I said, nah, bro, that's not the case. I said, church people have the same issues as other people.
Mm-hmm.
I said, look, when you get sick, we go to the hospital, right?
Yeah. Hey Kiss family, it's time to celebrate Black History Month at the Walmart Black and Unlimited Clock. One at Flatiron Plaza in New York City, one at Ovation Hollywood in Los Angeles, from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. with giveaways dropping every hour on the hour. It's the perfect time to try, like, and share Black-led products. It's free, that's right, and it's for everyone. And it's your chance to see how you can level up your daily routine with Black-led products that are creating a new world of choices at Walmart. Trust me, you don't want to miss it.
When you go to hospital, people sick.
Mm-hmm.
What if I told you we're not going to the hospital to get you corrected because people are sick in the hospital? What would you think? He said, that don't make no sense. I said, exactly. Why would you not go to church because people in the church have issues? Mm-hmm. Everyone is going to get healed.
Yeah.
So you're going to run into people with issues in church
mm-hmm.
the same way you got issues. And he's like, oh, that makes sense. I said, we all got issues.
Yeah.
We all need to heal.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, when you want to go, when you're interested, you let me know, and we'll look into it.
Mm-hmm.
So he was like, all right. And I still ask him about it. We pray every night.
Mm-hmm.
We pray that the boys all know they not gonna lay me down to sleep. They all know that. They understand who God is.
Yeah.
So when they come to me and they say, Dad, I want to try, I'm going to say, let's go find one.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to force it on them because I don't want them to feel like they have to believe something.
Right.
And I'm trying to raise kids with open minds.
Yeah, you know? I love that. So you have four whole boys. They are all aspiring athletes, I feel like.
They
all are walking in your shoes. As a former athlete, what is something that you instill in them? I know you're like really hard about working out and training. They train like world-class athletes.
All the time.
At 12.
7, 6, and 2.
Crazy.
Yes.
Crazy. And they're all amazing.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. One is your
godson. Huh?
One is your godson.
He is. That's a baby. He'd be right in there with him like, what y'all doing?
Yeah, too. He reminds me of Cairo. He just sees everything. He wants to emulate it.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Oh, yeah. So as a dad, like, what do you do to, hey, son, if this is what you want to do, I'm going to teach you how to properly go after that. And what do you do to try to protect them as well as they're navigating that?
The biggest thing is the mental peace.
Mm-hmm.
Because once you start playing sports, the first thing you focus on is other people.
Mm-hmm.
Who's better than me? Who's cheering for me? Mm-hmm. Who's hating on me?
Mm-hmm.
I got to tell them, like, none of that matters.
Yeah.
You're a kid.
Mm-hmm.
You're training to be better. So all you have to focus on is just getting better. 1% better every day.
Yeah.
And they're just like, that's it? I'm like, I don't care if you win.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care if you lose. I don't care how bad you are when you start. I tend to show them me at different stages of my life.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I'm like, don't look at dad now and say, look, my father is successful. So if I'm not there tomorrow, I'm a failure.
Yeah.
I show them when I got cut.
Mm-hmm,
we
mm-hmm.
talk realistically. My Jackson would be like, you didn't score no touchdowns in the NFL? No, I didn't. That wasn't my version of success at that point in my life.
Right.
You know, I'm having more of my successes now in a different part of my life because sports isn't everything.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest thing I tell them. Like, you're doing this to challenge your will.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing we can control is ourselves.
Yeah.
Sports to me is the ultimate way to test your discipline, challenge your will. That's the only reason why we're playing.
Mm-hmm.
You don't gotta be a world-class athlete.
Yeah.
You playing for fun.
Yep.
You may be a CEO, you may be an artist, you may be a pianist, you may be anything.
So I wanna go back to a challenging time in your life. We talked about your boys, and we talked about your responsibility to your wife.
Yes.
When you were playing for the Lions, you got injured.
Yes.
And you've been open about your addiction to pain medicine. During that time, what was it that you were going through in the mental, and was the pain pills something that you were using to suppress what you were going through at that time? Excuse me.
Oh, man. Funny thing is, the pain med stuff started in college.
DeVal.
It started in college. And to be honest, you don't realize when things start when you're going through life. Mm-hmm. It's not until you look back and you say, dang, it started then.
Yeah.
But to be an undersized athlete playing a behemoth sport,
yeah,
I was getting beat up all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a free agent tryout. In college, I was a walk-on. Mm-hmm. So I always had to prove. I always had to. But that takes wear and tear on your body. I had five knee surgeries, separated shoulder. I had to put a local anesthesia in this shoulder just to finish out my senior year, big needle.
Gosh.
So the medication was a numbing agent.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you're constantly numbing, you're afraid of the pain coming back. So you take pain pills ahead of time so that the pain don't come.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
It's not about being high.
It's a proactive.
Yeah. Like, if I don't take these four Tylenol, I know I'm going to start feeling it. So let me just take, and this is how bad it was. When I was in the league, I woke up, I took four Tylenol just to get out of bed. I would get to practice, I would take four Tylenol before practice. I would take four Tylenol at the end of practice, and I would take two Vicodin to go to sleep.
Jesus, what?
Every day.
Vicodin?
I took Vicodin every day. Two Vicodin every day to go to sleep. Because in my mind, it was like, if I don't get sleep, my body won't heal.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But I'm stressed out. Mm-hmm. I'm a rookie in the NFL. My body hurt. You can't sleep.
You can't sleep.
So I'm like, let me just take this so that I can knock me out.
Mm-hmm.
Then you wake up and you do it all over again. And before you realize it, you're like, man, this is years of abusing pills to numb pain.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to directly approach something.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it was. The numbing agent for me wasn't my pain.
Yeah.
It was numbing the fact that I was stressed out and I wasn't happy playing in the NFL.
Sheesh.
I never wanted to be in the NFL.
That is crazy, because you know how many young men, like, that's their dream. And then for you to make it and be like, I don't even want to be here.
I realized that when I was there.
Wow.
It don't matter how talented you are. I was faster than the fastest. I could jump high. I could catch the ball. It's a different type of love for the game that requires you to get up every day to continue to hone your skills.
Yes.
I did not want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to act. I wanted to dance. I wanted to just be,
yeah,
you know, an entertainer.
Mm-hmm.
And as I was in the NFL, I just was not enjoying it. I was miserable. Like, I was miserable. So the pain meds was like, yo, the guy, go to sleep. Get this $15,000 for this week. Go home and start your business. That's all it was for me.
Yeah.
And that's no knock on the NFL,
you
know, but it was just a means to an end. And the pain pills was a way for me to numb that pain so I could get through it.
Right.
And then it's funny we're talking about spirituality. It was my receiver coach in college. I was back home. When you get back home, now I don't have access to the pain meds.
Right.
So I'm at Kadeen's apartment, and every night, cold sweats, waking up, she got to change the sheets. She's like, DeVal, what is going on?
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't know. So I don't have the pain meds, so I'm drinking alcohol now, because that's the way to numb the pain. I got money. I have nothing but time on my hands.
Yes.
Me and my friends would wake up at 3 in the afternoon. As soon as we wake up, we would go get some tequila, orange juice. We take shots. We would go do whatever it is we was doing, and then we would party until 4 in the morning.
Wow.
Because me and Kay also weren't on good terms. So I was outside. I was outside just...
Were y'all married at this point?
No. Okay. We were. This was 2006.
Mm-hmm.
We weren't married. This was our first year apart.
Wow.
And you know, distance causes rifts in relationships.
Absolutely.
So we were trying to figure out how to get back to where we were. Because for the last 6 months, we were not living together. Then I moved back dealing with all the stuff I was dealing with.
Right.
I was a different person. She was like, yo, you got PTSD. Then she's like, you're going to have to get out. She was just like, nah, like, you can't stay here sleeping all day, going out with your friends and coming in late and then sleeping all day. So I was like, fine, I'll leave, right? But then she's also taking care of me. She's like, DeVal, every night you breaking out in cold sweats.
What is this? Yeah.
And then one night she called my receiver coach, and my receiver coach, Jamie Elizondo, and he's a very spiritual guy. And this is crazy because based on his spirituality, he doesn't curse. But he cursed me out without cursing me out.
Wow.
And was like, you have a responsibility to that woman.
That's a powerful talking to.
Yes.
When they can curse you out without cursing you out.
He didn't, not one curse word.
Yes,
he said, you have a responsibility to that woman to be better.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a responsibility to yourself to be better for yourself. so get up. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, I was just telling him everything I was going through. Like, it was just depression. Like, me and my girl are on the same page. Mm-hmm. The Lions was looking to draft another receiver, mm-hmm. who they ended up drafting Calvin Johnson. Oof. I had to deal with playing with Marcus.
Yeah.
Or now I got to deal with playing with Calvin Johnson. I already was dealing with Megatron.
The
receiver of all receivers.
Yeah.
I was depressed.
Wow.
And he was just like, that's not a good enough reason for you to lay in that bed and do the things you do. Mm. And he, once again, like my Aunt Debbie, mm-hmm. you know how you was raised.
Know how you were raised. Wow.
And it was just like a, and from that moment, no more alcohol, got in the gym, mm-hmm. stopped taking any pain. I don't even take Tylenol no more.
Yeah, you don't. Mm-mm. Cause I was like, you'll have a headache or something. I just take, you like, nope.
Nope.
I'm like, take, you don't want to take nothing? Nope.
Nope.
Yeah. Mm-mm. That's discipline though. And that's really saying, hey, I don't want to get back to that space. Because
yeah.
you already know how dependent you can be on that.
Chris, you see, even when I talk about it, I try not, like, it's so like dark, mm-hmm. that I'd be like, I'm not gonna cry.
Yeah.
I don't ever want to be back there, yeah. especially have my kids see me like
yes.
that.
Yes.
Like, mm. four young men, mm-hmm. they're gonna look at me like I looked at my father. Mm. And I used to blame my father. I was like, my father used to walk around like he was perfect all the time. He used to put up a facade. Mm-hmm. He put up a front, but now I see why. Because mm. that's the standard that I lived up to.
Yeah.
I was like, my dad does not do these things.
Wow.
So I'm not doing it. Okay. So with my boys, I yeah. want them to have the same standard.
So do you, I want to talk to you about that. So when it comes to black men, and you have four young black men that mm-hmm. you're raising up, and feeling like they can express themselves, mm-hmm. feeling like they don't have to be perfect all the time, mm-hmm. feeling like they don't have to walk in this facade and be like, I got mm-hmm. it all together. What are you doing to make sure that they have a balance of that, of being a man, but also showing that it's okay to cry. It's okay to say, hey, this is how I'm feeling right now.
This is the first thing. Every day mm-hmm. when I see my sons, come here. Mm-hmm. Did I tell you I love you today?
No.
Did you tell me you love me today? Mm-hmm. Give daddy a kiss. Mm-hmm. I kiss my sons.
Yeah.
I don't care what people think about it. Mm-hmm. I kiss my sons. I hold my sons. I hug my sons. Mm-hmm. And when I hug them, it's not like a church hug. Like,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
No, it's come here. I hold you tight. Mm-hmm. You know I love you, right?
Yeah.
You love me? Yeah. Were you great in school today? Tell me some things that you didn't do great. Mm-hmm. They tell me. I said, what are we going to do today? We're going to work on it. Mm-hmm. And that's it.
I love that.
And I also put them in spaces where they don't have to. Like, we grew up so different. Mm-hmm. Like, in the South, Jim Crow South. Because remember, I was born in 84.
Yeah.
Like, Jim Crow South is not that
it's
far
not
removed.
That far.
That's only
not.
20 years. Mm-hmm. Right? So my grandparents raised me in an environment where, you know, when you're around white people, mm-hmm. you keep your head down, you be quiet.
Yeah.
When we get dressed up, we're going to put on slacks, we're going to put on shoes. You yes sir, you yes ma'am, everybody. Mm-hmm. And it just always put me in a place where I'm like, are these people better than me? Is that why I have to act like this? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And if you think about it, that type of indoctrination teaches you, you know how they always say you got to humble yourself?
Yeah.
Why are black men always being told that we have to humble mm-hmm. ourselves? As an athlete, I watch it, right? Mm-hmm. Cam Newton. Mm-hmm. Does the Superman. He need to be humble. Mm. Aaron Rodgers does the discount double check, and he gets praised for it.
Yeah.
I'm not doing that to my boys. Mm-hmm. We walk in every environment in our truest, blackest selves.
Yeah.
What do you want to wear, Jackson? Mm-hmm. I just want to wear my flip-flops and a hoodie. Well, we wearing that. Mm-hmm. And when you walk in there, you look people in the eyes, and you impress them with your intellect, mm-hmm. not trying to assimilate to what mm-hmm. version they think you have to be
right.
in order to be accepted. Mm-hmm. And they're just like, okay.
Yeah.
And Kay is on board too.
Yeah.
Because I'm just so tired, and it's exhausting mm-hmm. to try to exist in someone else's world. Mm. Nah, this is my world. It's my world. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like no bull. My God created this world for me to exist the same way you exist.
Exactly.
So why I gotta humble myself and be all this and be quiet? Mm-hmm. Nope. Mm-mm. I'm speaking my piece. Mm-hmm. If you don't like it, I'll go where I am accepted.
Yeah.
And celebrated, mm-hmm. not just tolerated. And that's what I'm teaching my boys.
I love that. That mm-hmm. is so good. Your beautiful wife, Kadeem. Mm-hmm. You guys have known each other since elementary school.
Yes.
Been married since how many years now?
Let me get it right now. We've
right,
been
don't
together
get it.
22 years.
Okay.
We've been married 13 years.
Okay, 13 years. Was there any moment in your relationship that was super hard that actually helped shape you as the man that you are today?
Yes. The moment that I wasn't able to do all the things that I thought made me a man.
Mm.
And to still have a woman be there
mm-hmm.
in her feminine energy
yeah.
and not have to like belittle me or say, mm-hmm. why you ain't doing this. That moment there showed me what true partnership was.
Mm.
You know? Because mm-hmm. Imagine you're in the NFL. I'm making $500,000. I can whatever you want, baby. We go ahead. We go ahead. We
right.
do this. You want more vacation? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'm feeling like a man. I'm mm-hmm. feeling like I'm providing this lifestyle.
Yeah.
And then all of it gets stripped away.
Mm.
And you got to take that same woman
yeah.
from your cul-de-sac, your 4,500 square foot home in Canton, Michigan, and you got to go back to the hood.
Uh-huh.
We lived on New York Avenue between Dean and Bergen.
Mm.
It was called Murderer's Row. St. Mark's, right there,
yeah.
St. Mark's was rough.
Wow.
First year we were there, was two murders in the summertime.
Oh my goodness.
And I'm there with my wife who grew up in a house in Canarsie.
Yeah.
And she's just there like, okay, so what are we doing?
Mm, riding, she with you.
Just there. And I'm like, I don't even feel like a man right now.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just here.
Right.
That made me like so dedicated to my marriage.
I love that.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I watched the show
mm-hmm.
and Tyler was talking about what women need and what men need.
Yeah.
And so much of it was misconstrued.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched it and I got a completely different mm-hmm. message from it.
Yeah, when you watched the whole episode.
When I watched the whole episode, I got a completely different
yeah.
message. He was not telling women to accept nothing.
Mm-hmm.
But what he was saying is understanding when someone meets you at your worth, mm-hmm. your worth may not be a dollar amount.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. That's what I took from
yeah.
it. But I also do understand when people respond to things, it's often a projection of what they're going through.
Mm-hmm.
So
absolutely.
Even with our comments,
mm-hmm.
right? Someone may say something crazy in our comments.
Mm-hmm.
In the past, I'd be like, what is this person's problem? Why they?
Mm-hmm.
But now it's like, man, I wonder what that person has been through that that's what they received from that. You know
that's
what I'm
a
saying?
Good perspective, yeah.
It's like, dang, like sometimes I look at the comments, I'm like, man, that person must really be hurting.
Yeah.
And sometimes I really want to reach out and
like,
be
you
like,
okay?
Yeah, yeah, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, like,
yeah.
What's going on?
Yeah.
I hope that men in particular
mm-hmm.
understand that you are not defined by your wallet.
Yeah, yep.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
You're not defined by what you can provide for a woman
mm-hmm.
financially.
Mm-hmm.
But you are defined by the type of peace you can provide for your family.
Yeah, and I think a lot of times yeah. men put more on themselves than what the woman actually needs from them.
Facts.
You have this list like, I got to do this, I got to do this. And she's like, no, this is, I need this, and you're not doing this.
Crystal, I'm going to tell you right now, as much as I used to make jokes,
mm-hmm.
because this is what people need to understand too, a lot of our content was out of jest.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to make jokes, but my wife wanted this big wedding and da 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 da. I wanted a big wedding because I wanted to prove to everybody else the type of man I
yes.
was, that I could provide that type of wedding for my wife.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes maturity to get and be like, you know what, DeVal, that wasn't her.
Mm-hmm.
That was you
yeah.
the whole time.
Yeah.
You bought her the big ring. You
mm-hmm.
bought her the shoes. You
mm-hmm.
wanted to get her these things.
Yeah.
And then when you couldn't, you then blamed her
yeah.
because like you made me buy these things. She never made me do anything.
Wow.
And I hope young men take from that there's more that you can provide a woman than just a paycheck.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's so much more.
Yeah.
You and I talk about this all the time.
We do.
You going through your dating journey
mm-hmm.
and me being married. We talk about what, you know, because sometimes even now, I'm going to turn 40.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, see, man, I don't know what, you know, help me understand what Kay may be going through.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And then you'll just be like, well, DeVal, have you ever thought about this? And I'm like, no.
No.
I never
thought about that.
I never ever thought about
yeah.
that. And then I'm just like, I still have a lot to learn
mm-hmm.
at 40.
Yeah.
And I'm just open to it. I wanna learn. I wanna continue to just seek knowledge
mm-hmm.
and get a better understanding of what life is.
I love that.
You know?
Okay. Where do you see yourself in 5 to 10 years?
5 to 10 years. I see myself headlining my
yeah.
own feature film. With a production company,
mm-hmm.
I see myself carving out time to spend 6 months guaranteed with my boys every year.
Mm.
I'm making a point to not ever get so involved in my career that
mm-hmm.
I forget about them.
Wow.
And I realize that now, like this past weekend,
mm-hmm.
had an audition to do.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing is more important to me than my boys.
Yeah.
I told my agent, I said, y'all might have to get that to you later.
Mm-hmm.
Jackson got a tournament. Kyron wants to get trained. Dakota
yeah.
got speech therapy.
Mm-hmm.
Kaz wants to do art, and I have to do those things.
Yeah.
And you know what I learned?
Mm-mm.
people will bend to what you need. You know what my agent said? Mm-hmm. I can get you 3 more days.
See? Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
It's like, yo, so I can live in this in entertainment industry mm-hmm. and still be a family man.
Yeah.
I could still take my wife on dates every yes. weekend because I'm not filming in Bangladesh for a year and a half. Oh, okay.
I can do that. Yeah.
I can do this.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I can do this. And that's what I want to do. I want to be not only one of the biggest actors of all time, mm-hmm. I want to be one of the greatest fathers.
Yeah.
I want my boys to be like my dad, rock with me. Mm-hmm. And most importantly, I want to be that husband
yeah.
that my wife can say, He held us down.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I want.
I love you it. Know? Yes.
How about you? 5 years. 5 years.
5 years. Oh, my goodness. In 5 years, I want to be a successful businesswoman.
You
I have
be.
Some things that I'm working on. I want to, of course, star in my own movies. I want to mm-hmm. executive produce. I want to direct.
You will.
I want to turn this into a talk show.
You will. I come here and see this. I'm like, God, this is already a talk show. This is.
Thank you.
Chris, you know how proud I am.
Thank you so much.
Like, we talk so much about what we want to do, and mm-hmm. then we just doing it.
Doing
little
it.
Little by little, we doing
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that's what it's about. Execution.
Do you want to find love?
I do.
You will.
I do want to find love. I'm in a space, ooh, why my heart just like, as soon as you say I went.
Because I know you.
I
you,
do.
You try to suppress
love.
It.
I do.
You try,
I felt
but
that.
You can't.
Yeah.
You can't. You love people so much. I watch mm-hmm. you with all of your friends. I mean, that shit, that's how we got close. You look out for everybody. You looking out for me. I'm getting,
I
just, Chris, you know. And to be honest, like, people need to know. When I came here and I was trying to figure out things and do things for Kay when she was pregnant, you were my go-to.
Mm-hmm.
You're my go-to. You the one that got me to tell me how to
Van Cleef,
get Kay them Van Cleef, get Kay them Cartier. She carrying yeah. 10 months. You need to get this.
Yeah.
Like, you was.
What you are you love, doing, man?
You love people so much that God. Remember I told you that God always got me?
Yeah.
I can tell God's favorites.
Oh, my gosh.
God going to have you when you least expect it.
I'm waiting on it, man.
He's gonna have you when you and he gonna be tall, dark, and handsome. It's like you want. He probably gonna play ball, but I'm gonna dunk on his ass. Zach Attack. I see it for you though. I see
I
it.
I appreciate
you
that.
You too
man.
Great. You too great of a woman not to, yo. You know
Thank
that.
Thank you, friend. I appreciate
you know that.
That.
And then Kaz and Dakota gonna be the ring bearers.
Yep, exactly.
You know Kaz love you to death.
That's my, no, when, listen, him and Cairo, when I walked into Kay's dressing room at the live show,
yeah.
when I say the way Cairo ran to me, he was like,
oh, yeah.
I was like,
oh. And they haven't seen you in a while.
Yeah, it's been a minute.
You're working,
yes.
You're working.
Working,
a lot.
Yeah.
You know, that's why you haven't found love yet.
Yeah.
You focusing on what
I'm
you focus on.
No, and that's, I'm okay
and there's
with
wrong
that.
With that.
Yeah, I'm okay
there's,
with
there's
that.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
It's not like you. Like, I don't believe age is really a thing.
Mm-hmm.
I understand the biological clock for women is mm-hmm. a real thing.
Yeah.
But with modern technology and with you taking care of your body the way mm-hmm. you do, you'll be fine.
Yeah.
If that's what you choose to have children, you know?
Right.
You may not want to.
Yeah.
If you
every day
that.
It's a different feeling. I'm like, yeah.
I know. We
talk
about that.
I see my little nephew and I'll be like, oh. Y'all, when he go home? Okay. I see y'all.
Stay with a toddler for too long. You be like, I ain't having no freaking kids. Mm-hmm. I mean, these kids are emotional terrorists. They are. Toddlers are no joke.
Yes.
Love is coming
Seriously.
For you, baby.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
He's coming for you.
Ugh.
Come on, man. Come on. I love you. Thank you for this. You made me cry. You made me cry. I said I wasn't going to cry, and she made me cry.
Dear God, thank you so much for this day. Thank you for letting DeVal make it here safely. Dear God, I ask that you just guide this interview, or not interview, but it's a conversation between two friends. Let this conversation help others, inspire others, and bring them closer to you, dear God, in everything that we do. Let him get where he needs to go safely after this. In Jesus' name we pray, amen.
Amen.
Amen. Please make him cry.
Oh,
yes,
God,
Lord.
Jesus.